Hello there, boxing fans around the world. Thank you for joining me once again here on Talk and Fight for another episode of Boxing News Today. And today we're going to start off by talking a little bit, just a little bit, about boxing and the Olympics. Now, as a student of history, you'll probably appreciate the fact that boxing has been as part of the Olympic Games as far back as, I'd say, 600 BC. When the ancient Greeks would clobber each other wearing wrists wrapped in leather pieces and smashing each other. But nonetheless, it's gone on from there. I think the first, let's have a quick read here. The first fight, does it tell me when the first fight was? Oh, yes. Boxing's been contested at the Summer Olympic Games since St. Louis, 1904. With the exception of the 1912 Stockholm Games. And as we all know, women's boxing wasn't introduced until 2012 at London. Anyway, there's currently 8 weight class for men, 5 for women. But here's the old did you know thing. Did you know? Okay. There's a chap out there by the name of Eddie Egan. I'll just mention his name because he was an American who won a gold medal as a boxer at the 2012 Games, it says here. But then 12 years later, as a bobsledder, won another gold medal. Among other boxing Hall of Famers who began their careers as Olympic boxers, Floyd Patterson, 17 years old, won an Olympic gold medal. George Foreman, high school dropout, George Foreman, right? Gold medal at Mexico City, 1968. Joe Frazier. Traveled all the way to Tokyo, 1964, took advantage of an injury, gave him a spot in the heavyweight tournament, winning a gold medal. Muhammad Ali, remember that name? Won a gold medal in Rome, 1960. Oscar De La Hoya, Golden Boy himself, won gold at Barcelona, 1992, right? And, of course, Sugar Ray Leonard. So an awful lot of boxers who we know as household names today, among boxing fans, began their careers at the Olympics. So what is awfully curious to me is this ongoing debacle between the International Olympic Committee and who they perceive or don't perceive to have the right to run the games on their behalf, not only after Paris, but for, in particular, Los Angeles and beyond. Let me just recap, because I've been saying for a few weeks now, maybe months, maybe years. As we all know, on Wednesday, the International Olympic Committee stated it need to find a suitable new international boxing body by early next year. Okay? Because it had stripped, the IOC had stripped, the IBA, the International Boxing Association, the organization run by Umar Kremlev, and stripped them of their right to run the boxing tournaments at the last two games. And certainly, obviously, for the next game in Paris, which is being managed by another organization, neither the IBA nor World Boxing. And this was due to the IBA's questionable integrity, among other things, regarding referees and judges' decisions. Anyway, so now the IOC is scrambling to find a new governing body to oversee the Olympic operations with respect to boxing, and will they have enough time to find that body, even though World Boxing makes it pretty clear they have done everything they possibly can do to be that particular body. And it's an incredibly complicated story if you delve into the, shall we say, politics of what's going on. Because aside from the accusation of corruption, there are also allegations of violent and threatening language by IBA Russian President Umar Kremlev, as I mentioned the other day, used towards IOC members. That has led to the IOC excluding the IBA from the Olympic Games. So the IBA has considered filing an appeal to the Swiss Supreme Court. It's become rather a complicated mess that's jeopardizing the sport's presence at the Olympics. You know, realistically, world boxing has done everything it can possibly do to pursue recognition by the IOC, but it has until 2025 to file its claim for the sport's sake. Otherwise, there'll be no boxing in the 2028 Games in Los Angeles. And as I mentioned at the outset of this particular episode, that would be a real shame for the thousands of young men and women around the world who are competing in their respective countries, moving up and down their various rankings and their various weight divisions, competing every step of the way. And at the Olympics, you know, it is quite fair, short matches without a doubt, but exciting matches and very competitive matches. But there's something else to consider. The Olympics draws millions of eyeballs. So for boxing to lose its spot, if you will, within the Olympic Games is surely, every pun intended here, surely a black eye for boxing and the people who organize boxing in general and are paid handsomely for that right. As I said, the global games are about the best athletes from each country competing, with every country showcasing their pride. And as I said, it takes away the competition. If you remove the Olympics from the equation, you know, you won't see fighters like Anthony Joshua and Canelo Alvarez or Tyson Fury compete on the world stage. As I mentioned before, there are many prior greats who've competed at the Games, and also many current professionals who competed at the Games as well. Anyway, boxing fans, time's running out for the IOC to find a replacement for the IBA, but that replacement is obviously world boxing, and why they're making these crazy, outlandish, scary comments is beyond me. They should make their decision. I think world boxing has done everything necessary to take that position from the IBA, even though the IBA offers tournaments and lots of cash for its competitions. Funded by the gas company from Russia. Anyway, nothing against the Russians. I like Russians, but in this particular case, the IBA should step aside, recognize there was some wrongdoing, make apologies, maybe create some own tournament, maybe create their own boxing league in Russia and beyond, and find other champions to compete at the Olympics. Anyway, speaking of champions, let's move along. Sorry, got carried away there. Eddie Hearn and Matchroom have signed IBF welterweight champ Jaron Boots Ennis to a multi-fight promotional deal in partnership with Boots Promotions. Ennis, 31-0, 28 knockouts, is slated to make his much-anticipated return to the ring in the summertime, where he'll make his first defense of his world title, more than likely against Canadian Cody Crowley. Ennis was promoted to IBF champ in November after former undisputed welterweight ruler Terence Crawford was forced to relinquish the title. Now, what does our boy Eddie Hearn have to say about all this? Well, he's pretty excited. Matchroom promoter Eddie Hearn says he wants his new signee, Jaron Boots Ennis, to defend his IBF welterweight title against his mandatory Cody Crowley in Philadelphia in either June or July. Hearn says he wants to push for a fight against Terence Crawford for Boots and believes he beats him. Crawford turns 37 in September and rarely fights, as we all know. If Hearn waits too long, it could be a pointless fight for Boots to take. Crawford has become a Keith Thurman type who makes only rare appearances, which I don't understand. But anyway, once Boots, 31-0, 28 knockouts, gets that fight out of the way against the unbeaten Crowley, 22-0, Hearn then wants to look for the big fights, he says, for him, that'd be Boots, to accomplish his goal of becoming undisputed champ at 147. Now, whether he beats Crowley or not is another story. Because U.S. fans don't really know Crowley, which I find hard to believe. But Boots has got a few decent names on his resume, as does Crowley, with victories over these guys: Abel Ramos, Josecito Lopez, and Cudjotilo Abdukakhorov. Hearn wants to match boots against a WBC interim welterweight champ, Mario Barrios, and WBA champ, Imantas Stanionis, for unification fights. After that, Hearn hopes to put a fight together between Boots and Terence Crawford. So he kind of has the same strategy, if you ask me, that he had lined up for Anthony Joshua a year ago when he said, flat out, he said, we'll have three fights and then a big fight, a whopper. So I kind of think that, but again, as this writer has pointed out, will Terence Crawford be that kind of viable, entertaining, profitable fighter that pay-per-views like DAZN, etc. are looking for? And in this particular case, because Matchroom has a deal with DAZN, you want to believe that Boots had better be fighting someone who has a name and can generate a big audience. Because ultimately coming up in this particular episode, I am going to be talking about Ryan Garcia, who warned Gervonta Tank Davis that his popularity will decline if he doesn't start to face top-level competition. Okay, fair enough. Davis' biggest win to date was when he stopped Garcia, as we all know, with a seventh-round technical knockout last year. The fight sold over 1.2 million pay-per-views, and while the live gate exceeded $20 million, it became boxing's highest-grossing event in 2023, and that was the most Davis and Garcia had ever generated for a fight. However, there is a perception that Davis has not faced the best in his weight class. He's been linked with fights against Shakur Stevenson, Vasily Lomachenko, Teofimo Lopez, Devin Haney, to name a few. Fights with Shakur and Loma could be made at 135, both for titles. Davis could also move up to 140 for belts. However, Davis will face Frank Martin in June. Martin is Garcia's stablemate as the undefeated southpaw seeks his first world title. But Davis is the favorite once again. Is not the big name boxing fans had hoped for. So Garcia has called on Davis to fight better opposition or lose his fan base. Okay, he said, I'm quoting here, so don't criticize me for this bad grammar. Here we go. I'm not even worried about Tank no more. Tank has got to be worried about us. Tank is going to fall off because he thinks playing that works. Nobody thinks that's cool anymore. You got to be vocal. You got to be ready for that smoke. If you're not ready to fight, we're going to forget about you because Gervonta Davis, you're not that special. If you don't fight, nobody is going to watch you. Facts. Nobody is going to really want to watch that. You're going to see his numbers are not going to be good against Frank, I guarantee you. The 30 million fight, you can lie all you want. I know he has a lot of fans out there that fake his numbers. It ain't going to be good. I guarantee you that it's not. He's going to have to see one of us. If it's not me, it's going to be somebody else. He has to fight me because it's the only way he's going to make $30 million in one night, Garcia stated. However, let's add, Garcia is also struggling to sell tickets for his fight against Devin Haney. The two boxers square off on April 20th, coming up very soon, as Garcia chases Haney's WBC junior welterweight title. But tickets are pretty easy to get. And Garcia stated they were too high to begin with. Ringside seats were allegedly between $5,000 and $10,000. And DAZN now has reduced the pay-per-view price from $80 to $70. But who is going to watch that fight? That is the question. And while Garcia might have a huge fan base on social media and ticket prices have been reduced, he's not exactly helped himself during this buildup. He's revealed, he smokes weed, drinks beer, alcohol, shows a lack of focus. His social media, therefore, has divided his fans. And Garcia has also stated he's lost sponsors. So the venue has also not helped, as Garcia wanted to fight in Vegas, not New York. And the lack of venues in Vegas meant the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, New York was chosen. Now, Garcia may be singling out Tank, but he himself faces the same criticism. So on it goes. The other day, I mentioned a decent fight coming up in the women's division featuring Ellie Scottney and Ceglaine Lefebvre for the IBF and WBO Women's Super Bantamweight title. It's taking place as an undercard fight between Jordan Gill and Zelpha Barrett in the super featherweight division. And I got to mention, of the, I don't know, let's say 10 matches that are going on in this particular card, there are two that feature four women, Scottney and Lefebvre, okay, for the IBO and WBO Women's Super Bantamweight title, okay? But also on this card, Rhian Dixon and Karen Elizabeth Carabajal are fighting for the vacant WBO Women's Lightweight title. And those are the only titles that are available on this entire card. You know, so I'm really surprised that the boxing media are not, shall we say, mentioning more of these young ladies and their capabilities in the ring, matching pound for pound with the men who are fighting, whose names I'm not even going to mention because I don't recognize any one of them, with the exception of the so-called headliners. And the only reason I know Jordan Gill is because he had a pretty good knockout over Michael Conlon last year. But anyway, other than that, I think the boxing world in particular should be talking about women in the ring a little bit more than what they're doing right now. So speaking of someone who does generate an audience, captivates that boxing fan ear, is Bob Arum. Whatever he says gets quoted, as does whatever Eddie Hearn says, it gets quoted, and potentially Oscar De La Hoya. But other than that, very few people of this ilk get quoted and make their presence known to the media. So rather than speaking about something, shall we say, worthy, you know what he's talking about? He's talking about the biggest underachiever he ever promoted, right? Says Bob Arum, "I thought skill-wise he was the equal of Leonard and Hearns." Now, whenever you think of a fighter who looks set for true greatness but fell short, who pops into your mind? Whenever you think of a fighter who is never ever the same again after tasting defeat for the first time, who do you come up with? Chances are it's the man Hall of Famer Bob Arum thinks of when it comes to the biggest underachiever he ever promoted. You ready for it? Don Curry. Curry, dubbed in the early 1980s as the next Sugar Ray Leonard, was a very special talent. With the Lone Star Cobra winning the unified welterweight title, with Curry being hugely impressive wins with Milton McCrory, Marlon Sterling twice, and Colin Jones. But then, after suffering a punishing upset loss to Lloyd Hannigan, Curry was never the same force. His seemingly straightforward path to all-time greatness was gone. Curry fought on and even won a version of the light middleweight title, but he suffered a nasty knockout at the hands of Mike McCallum a year after being humbled by Hannigan. In the end, Curry would walk away with a good but far from great record, 34-6, 25 knockouts. Today, sadly, Curry reportedly suffers from chronic traumatic encephalopathy. That's the concussion-related medical terminology that I cannot. It's kind of like trying to, anyway, names and medical explanations are not my forte. And he's been dealing with that since 2021. So for a few years now, he's been having some difficulties with his brain, frankly. Curry seemingly had it all during the years 83 to 86, as Arum recalled when speaking with the media. He said, "The fighter that comes to mind quickly is a welterweight that I promoted who was extraordinarily talented and I thought would be a huge star, but fell short, named Donald Curry." Arum said in response to the question of who was the biggest underachiever he ever worked with, "I co-promoted with Frank Warren in the UK. He was a tremendous talent, but he never reached his full potential. I thought skill-wise, his equal Sugar Ray Leonard and Tommy Hearns, when they were welterweights, he was enormously talented. But he ended up with managerial problems and business problems, and he got sidetracked. And when he came back after sitting out for a while, an English fighter named Lloyd Hannigan beat him. That was the beginning of the end for Donald Curry." So today's boxers might want to take that as a bit of a lesson, not necessarily the neurological problems that the young man's dealing with at the moment, but the so-called managerial problems and business problems and getting sidetracked and taking time off, shall we say, because when you come back, are you listening, Terrence Crawford, you know, among others out there, get back in the ring, start fighting, make it exciting for us. All right. That's about all I got for you today. Thanks for listening. Appreciate it. Remember, like, share, subscribe, hit that notification bell. And we'll see you later on talkandfight.com. I typically go live to air 11 a.m. Eastern time, especially when there's news to report and the occasional rumor and the occasional bit of chatter. Anyway, again, thanks for joining me. Appreciate it. I see there's nothing else across my various screens. Chat soon.